Hello guys, today we have that Challenger 175, the first mammoth Challenger that we had this year, the first of that category out of five to discuss, the one happening in the second week of Indian Wells, and we will also have to talk about the other three events, plus of course the previews. So let's just get down to business. I think Phoenix, as usual, it had a very good field. I think it had a lot of good narratives too, because that's maybe not a given. Sometimes, because even though there were 19 top 100 players, this event could have definitely turned out a little less exciting than this, and it actually was very good. Nuno Borges beat Matteo Berrettini in the final, so Nuno, starting with him, he defends the Phoenix title. This is his sixth challenger. All in all, what a year for him so far. Finally making that ATP Tour quarterfinal, but that isn't that even the most important. Like, he also made the forefront at the Australian Open, obviously, and also now this Challenger 175, which of course, yes, he defends, but given how little he will have to sort of do in order to keep his points in the next few months, that's massive for him. He is in the top 20 of the ATP race. That sounds a little crazy, but yeah, I mean, Nuno Borges has basically secured his top 100, his top 100 spot for the end of the year already by the middle of March. So this is really a fantastic situation for him to attack the rankings later on in the year. And yeah, when it comes to Nuno's run in Phoenix, it was actually really clean, other than that one match in the semifinals against Luka Van Asch. But he beats Kokkinakis, he beats Miller, he beats Pervia retirement, and also, yeah, Van Asch in the semis had some minor cramps there and it was a bit of a mess. But in the final against Berrettini, after going down an early break, he really delivers. You know, he was like, I'm going to talk about Matteo, of course, more in detail soon, but he really made them earn this, you know? It wasn't like Berrettini, despite being still, like, I guess, maybe a little rusty, maybe a little tired. It wasn't like Matteo just gave him that on a silver platter. Like, every single time Nuno would get close in the second set to closing out the match. 5-3, he has a match point. 6-5, he has a match point on return. Eventually has to do it in the tiebreak. In the tiebreak, he also comes back from love 3 down. However, anytime he anytime he would be very close to pull this off, Matteo would definitely still like manage to hold on, manage to keep himself in it. But the tiebreak that Nuno played from 0-3 was absolutely clutch. He, of course, recently beat, for example, Grigor Dimitrov at the Australian Open, and he was hitting through the backhand slice pretty well there. So I guess we knew that he could do it against Matteo, but it still required a lot of good execution in the most important moments. He did have a bit of a choke at that 5-3 game when he was trying to serve it out at 7-5, 5-3, but of course recovered from that, still took the match in two. And he defends the title in Phoenix, which definitely is a good court profile for him. Like, it's pretty fast, but it still takes spin well. And I think when Nuno has time to set up that heavy forehand, but it still does damage, that's probably where he's at his strongest. So what a beginning to the season for Nuno Borges, top 20 in the ATP race. Now, to talk about Matteo Berrettini, who of course was the finalist in Phoenix, also a big story, obviously, because Berrettini was playing his first event since the US Open. And it was like he was delaying the comeback, you know, he would be on the entry list, maybe even be in the draw, like in Australia and Indian Wells, and then pull out. However, it seems like he really took his time, and perhaps it's going to just do him a world of good, you know, because he had some wild matches, he had to battle all the way through this week, but because of that, he got like a lot of match practice in. He goes down a set in the first three rounds against Gaston Cazot-Atman, comes back in all of these matches. Because of rain, he has to play two matches on Saturday. So he beats Atman in almost 3 hours and then Vukic in over 2 hours. So he plays 5 hours. I don't know if this contributed to how he performed in the final, probably. But honestly, the whole week, Matteo was like, you know, the plus ones weren't going in sometimes. The slice approaches would be sometimes like 2 meters out of the court. He was just rusty, you know, double faults in the key moments. He was just rusty. Let's see, like, as long as he's healthy, it's a perfect start to his comeback anyway, despite him losing in the final, just because of how much playtime he got. He was unbeaten in the tiebreaks until the final. He was 4-0, so of course it was great from Nuno to get him there from 0-3, especially as Matteo was really threatening to take the second set by that point. But all in all, he also was struggling in the second round against Arthur Cazaux. He was 3-5 down in the third. Cazaux, by the way, was my pick for the title, so I can't be too disappointed because he was in the position to win against Berrettini, but played a horrible streak of games. That Berrettini-Cazaux match as a whole was like, yeah, just a mess, you know? It was not as good as expected. But, well, it happens sometimes. Still, it had the drama, had the entertainment because of how close the scoreline was. The better match was Berrettini against Atman in the quarters. Like, that was a better comeback. That was a comeback that he really earned. He was 3-6, 2-3 down with a break. He manages to break back with a pretty much a perfect game. And then he eventually makes it 8-6 in the third set tiebreak. But yeah, all in all, again, if this is not health in any way, if he's just ready for it physically, this is kind of a perfect start to his comeback. And let's see how Matteo performs in Miami right now. By the time I'm recording, we still don't have the Miami draw, so I can't tell you who he's going to play. Oh, and Nuno, by the way, of course, also in the Miami main draw, which is worth mentioning because last year he had that crazy journey where basically he had to fly over from Phoenix right after the final in order to make it for Miami qualifying round one, given the time zone change, given the fact that he had a connection. And yeah, it was just a really rough moment for him. And he actually managed to qualify as well. He beat Steve Johnson and Borna Gojo before losing to Rusev in the main draw. So this time Nuno just is straight up in the main draw. He doesn't have to pull this off, thankfully for him. Semi-finalist was Aleksandar Vukic, and I have to say he really took that Djokovic loss at Indian Wells. He like really took the best out of it, I think. He took a lot of confidence from that. He crushes Kopriva, he crushes Fognini, he beats Alice in a great quarterfinal performance. Similarly to Berrettini, he had to play two matches on Saturday, but he had a very short one against Alice. It was like 1 hour and 15. So he seemed like the favorite to me over Berrettini. In fact, eventually, even for well, despite the initial pricing, I think even for the bookies it was the case. However, he loses to Berrettini in two tiebreaks. A bit of an opportunity miss there, but still, it's good progress for Vukic, who was, of course, how 1-7? No, sorry, 2-7 for the year going into this event, and was like on a huge downward spiral. But it seems that this Djokovic loss really gave him a bit of confidence, and I can't even say that the opposition was so much worse here than what he usually was encountering on the main tour thus far. Well, of course, sometimes, he played Tsitsipas in Los Cabos, he played Jordan Thompson twice. But yeah, I think it was just really a matter of confidence. And also the courts, as I said earlier, like pretty fast but take spin well. That sounds like a phenomenal combination for Vukic. And by the way, Berrettini would like pull himself out of trouble with a lot of kick serves as well this week. The second serve, despite not going for much, was an actually like a proper weapon. And I think that's also a thing on these Phoenix courts. And then when it comes to the fourth semifinalist, it was Luka Vanhasch, who beat Garin, Lestien, Kudla, and lost to Borges. I would say under the radar in the draw. He managed to outlast Garin in the opening round. Then he gets a retirement from Lestien. Denis Kudla he had zero issues with. And yeah, he could have beaten Borges maybe, but he loses the third set 6-2. So, he didn't come all that close. But of course, making a semi-final, the Challenger 175 is a very solid result. And I guess especially with how Vanhasch was trending in February, after Davis Cup, he only won one match out of six. So especially with that semi-final really helps the young Frenchman going forwards here. And yeah, I guess for that 175 in Phoenix, that's gonna be it as usual. A pretty big success, I would say. Berrettini was like the headliner and the guy who got the most reach and got the most attention to the Phoenix Challenger. So it was good to have him there. Borges and Berrettini, by the way, that was a final between two former champions, as actually both Nuno, of course, won it in 2023, as I said, the defending champ. But Matteo also won it in the past. I think it was the first edition in 2019 where he saved the match point against Mikhail Kukushkin in the final. And now also in Phoenix, when it comes to the doubles, as with singles, this was a very high-profile draw. Sadio Dumbia and Fabian Rebull, one of the best pairings so far this year, Even on the main tour, they managed to dominate the competition here as well. They actually got a walkover early on, but then they beat Kruger Kudla, Cash Galloway, and Hijikata Patten. So they managed to beat both Cash and Patten, I guess, but in different pairs. And they eventually, just got the title without too much of a hustle. Even 6-3, 6-2 in the final, 6-3, 6-4 in the semis. They just managed to convert their top seed position into that big ATP Tour title. And with that, I think we can move on to the next events. There were two 75s, one of them in Santiago, one of them in Székesfehérvár. Let's maybe stick to Santiago first. Let's stay in the Americas, where we had a South American classic in the final, Juan Pablo Varillas against Facundo Bagnis. Facundo Bagnis being my pick for the title, so I didn't get a point this week, but I was pretty close with Bagnis. And this was also, similarly to Phoenix, this was also a final between two former champions of the event. Varillas won Santiago in 2021, and Bagnis won it in 2013, 2015, and 2016. So, when it comes to Varillas, this was a wild run. This was just impossible that he even made the final, honestly, because Varillas comes in with a 1-8 record for the season. Obviously, that's not ideal. And even though the last win was in Santiago at the ATP 250 event, and also, still, it's not the same venue, by the way, and there's like a pretty big difference of altitude too. One is in the mountains, the ATP event. This one is like more, you know, mainland Santiago, if you can call it that. What I'm trying to say is that he comes in and he has Paul Jabb right away. Paul Jabb, who beat him in the Santa Cruz final in 2022, so, you know, a rough opponent right away. And he has to come back from 3-6 in the final set tiebreak against him. Then he wins another final set tiebreak against Orlando Luz. And then he wins another final set tiebreak against Francesco Passaro. And he has to come back from 3-6 down in the final set tiebreak again. So he saves 6 match points in the first 3 rounds. 3 against Jabb, 3 against Passaro. And also he wins 3 consecutive final set tiebreaks. Which, by the way, before then, he hadn't played a deciding set tiebreak since the 2023 Australian Open qualifying. So well over a year. And after that, I was like, okay, so like if Varillas plays Bagnis in the final, because that was already the match that we were considering, he probably doesn't have anything left for that. Like, I don't think he really will have any shot at Bagnis. However, what really helped Varillas was that he had he managed to make the semifinal very confident for him. 6-3, 6-2 against Liam Draxler. And that allows him to be like very fresh for the final, actually, despite all the early effort. And he manages to beat Bagnis 6-3, 6-2. A bit of a lethargic performance from the Argentinian. I guess I'll touch on it in a second. But all in all, Varillas really needed it because he recently fell out of the top 100. Now he's back. And he kind of has to make Roland Garros main draw because he's defending the fourth round points there. Soon enough, he's also going to drop Sanremo, but actually after Sanremo, he's not going to have all that much to defend. So, you know, it's not looking that bleak for Varillas anymore, basically, after this title. While it was when he was 1-8 and really short on confidence. Like, even this week, you could see it, you know, when he was playing Jabb, especially the opening round, he was just really short on confidence. And it was good to see him in the later rounds because even if the opponents maybe weren't stepping up in the semis and the final, it was just the hitting that we know Varillas is capable of, you know? It was just when he lets loose, when he manages to find his groove and just reminds you how good of a ball striker he is, basically. Facundo Bagnis, the finalist, his 31st Challenger final, could have gotten his 18th title, which would be, you know, by far, already would put him in like the sole position among active players. Kukushkin has 16 and also Maximo Gonzalez has 17. But the status, of course, of activity when it comes to Gonzalez is kind of questionable since he only plays doubles and he's been doing that for a few years now. Anyway, Bagnis was probably the main favorite in Santiago. As I said, I picked him to win the title. He beats Campagnoli, Boitan, Hugo Delien, Gustavo Haide. Great conditions for him as well with that 500, 600-ish altitude. Eventually, though, the final against Varillas, he will not be pleased with that performance. He was like a little all over the place, bailing out of rallies with drop shots, net approaches. The match point was like kind of, again, a throwaway serve and volley. He, at one point, just became pretty disinterested, it seems. I don't know, maybe there was an underlying physical condition there. tough to know, but on his way to the final, he was pretty elite again. What a great season, of course, it's been for Bagnis. Let's see if he can maybe turn it into like a top 100 return or something like that. But for now, yeah, in Santiago, he was pretty insane. For the first four matches, he only needed two tie breaks against Delian and Haide. Otherwise, he was blowing away the competition. He actually is also trailing the head-to-head with Varias 2-6 right now. Which I wouldn't put that much stock into it, like at least this match, you know, this match wasn't really Bagnis at his best. But that's actually the second time already that he loses a challenger final to Varias after Sao Leopoldo 2022. That one was a lot closer though, it was a free setter. And now when it comes to the semi-finalists in Santiago, Gustavo Haide had a pretty nice run, and it was also an interesting twist because he recently lost to Tomas Barrios Vera, actually in his most recent match in Rio de Janeiro, the ATP 500 in the opening round. Here he beats him in the opening round, great win over Gianluca Magher in the quarterfinals as well. So eventually he loses to Bagnis in the semis, but yeah, Bagnis in such conditions and also in this form is always going to be quite dangerous, so I think for Haide it was obviously still a very nice run given that he took a revenge on Barrios Vera and also scored that win over Magher, who also was like pretty overwhelming for his opponents up until then. You know, with that first strike tennis he plays on clay, basically, in such conditions, he's also going to be dangerous always. And then Liam Drax, who's, just focusing on the clay so far this season, getting okay results, honestly. I mean, Buenos Aires, he made the quarters at the beginning of the year, semifinals of the only ITF he's played. Last week in Santa Cruz, he loses to Murkel Delian in a tough match, Murkel, of course, being the eventual runner-up in that event. And then Santiago, he manages to make the semis. He beats Sekulic, crazy match in the opening round. He wins from match point down. Then he beats Olivieri, Ugo Carabelli from 1-4, 15-40, I think, down. Or no, 1-4 and like 4 breakpoints. I don't think there were any consecutive. But that was an insane match. And we've said it a few times, I think, about Drax. But like, whatever he doesn't have with his strokes, whatever he can't do with his strokes, he makes up for with grit. He is definitely like one of the biggest fighters that we're watching on the Challenger circuit right now. And that match against Camilo in the quarterfinals definitely will stay with me. If you want to see it on my timeline on Twitter, there's a point that I posted from it. It was a break point in the third set where he just moonballs Ugo Carabelli to death. Whether you like it or not, whether that's exciting tennis for you, that's kind of debatable. I think I said some peak tennis there, and it was like kind of sarcastic because, you know, it looks funny. But you gotta find ways to win, and Drax is really good at that, actually. So here he loses to Varias in the semis because at some point, yeah, he runs into that great ball striker that he kind of can't match. But all in all, it was still, of course, a very fine run, and that win over Ugo Carabelli I will remember for a while for sure, because it was pretty crazy in that third set. And yeah, I guess with that, we also have to talk about the Santiago doubles. It's a Brazilian pairing winning with Romboli and Zorman, and they beat Arias Zeballos. So definitely a lot of high quality here in this event when it comes to at least the first few pairings. King Stolder were also there, losing to Romboli Zorman in the semifinals. And now we can move on to Sekes Fehervar. This is that event that I visited last year, when it was a Challenger 50, and it was kind of more interesting back then already, you know, as a Challenger 50, I think it was more interesting. The quarterfinals there that I got last year were just insane, with Medjedovic Pirosh, Marozhan Andreev, and stuff like that. Koboli was also involved. This time, it kind of was like an event that was based around two players, and I'm talking about Dominic Thiem and Richard Gasquet. But the problem for the event was that they both left the tournament in the first round. Dominic Thiem losing to Daniel Michalski in the qualifier. I mean, you would feel that this was a good draw for Domi, right? But yeah, I mean, so far after that extended training block that he had, not much has improved. Michalski was both playing inspired, as most players are on the Challenger Tour against Thiem, but also, yeah, just not scared of whatever the post-injury Thiem can throw at him when it comes to pace. And Gasquet was also like a pretty had a pretty horrible performance in the opening round, but at least he had it against the eventual champion of the event. So let's talk about that. Chun Sin Seng beats Titu Androge in the final via retirement. For Tseng, this is his first challenger title and even first challenger final since April 2022. And if you remember how good Chun Sin Seng was at the time, like between December 2021 and April 2022, he makes five challenger finals, he wins three titles. He gets to the top 100 shortly, then really like bounces off the main tour, like he had nothing on not going for him there. And that makes him fall into like a terrible slump. But he's not as bad as his 2023 results, obviously. Hopefully this is a return to form. He definitely can be a pretty fun defender, I would say, just because of how fast he is. And, you know, he actually likes playing sort of quick-paced rallies. He doesn't like, I don't know, slowing things down. He likes that one great big rhythm that you can give him. And a lot of opponents this week definitely were falling into that trap, including Richard Gasquet. Tseng had to start from the qualifying and he beat Artur Gea, which was like a pretty competitive match already. He had to save a lot of breakpoints at 3-4 in the third to win 6-4. Then he beats Krutek Gasquet, wins three consecutive deciding sets against Vincent Ruggeri, against Martino and Maestrelli. And then against Droga in the final, he gets a very early retirement. But all in all, it's still pretty, I'm delighted to see him just back on track and back to winning titles. Because a ranking of like 350 that he would sometimes fall back down to like in the last few months, that doesn't seem like a good reflection of his real level, does it? And then we also, and by the way, this is his fourth challenger title, and the story here for sure is that he has 2-1 on indoor clay now. And that is notable because this is basically two venues all year, Sekesh Fehervar and Maya. Also, out of his 6 challenger finals, he has 3 on indoor clay, 2 in Maya, 1 in Sekesh Fehervar. So, well, it's pretty clear, I guess, that this, these conditions, which are pretty unique on the Challenger Tour right now, non-existent on the ATP Tour as well, are quite good for him. And then Titu Androge, the finalist. I have to say he was looking stronger than Tseng on the way to the final. He beats Dalavale, Kovalik, Pirosh in the quarters. That was a big match. Of course, Pirosh, one of the favorites for the event, could have gotten the top 100 with a title. You know, home crowd definitely supporting him quite a lot, but Droge had the answers against him. Droge makes it so physical. He hits heavy while staying consistent. So like for Jombi, that's definitely not a good combination. And then he also beats Agamenone in the semis, doesn't even give him a shot. But unfortunately, he has to retire in the final. Shoulder injury is what he had, apparently. That's what's in the PDF. And maybe someone told me that you could see like a frame of it on the on the feed on the stream. Personally, I couldn't really decipher what was happening there because the MTO that he took at 1-4 was behind the umpire's chair. But someone said that you could see a frame of him like touching his shoulder or something like that. But anyway, he was like clearly unwell. He was bailing out of rallies with drop shots right away. And it was a bit weird. Like I was thinking, okay, so is this an approach against Tseng? Now it doesn't feel like it when you're drop shotting on 4 points in a row and losing like 3 of them. And at 1-4, Love 30, T2-1 decided to give it up. So it's a shame for him because he's now 0-4 in Challenger Finals. Last year, he lost to Zepieri in Cherbourg. He lost to Marterer in Amersfoort. And I think I'm missing Nava in Modena. So being 0-4 and not being able to give his 100% here in the final, even though he kind of, he was the guy who played a lot less tennis, even despite his doubles title, I would say that he had less exhaustion than Tseng going into the final, but apparently, you know, it's an injury, what can you do? So 0-4 in Challenger Finals is now pretty brutal for Droge, but if he keeps making so many of them, because this is all literally like within 13 months, then he's gonna get it eventually. And with Maestrelli, the semi-finalist, and also Agamenone, Maestrelli had a very good chance to beat Tseng, but he just couldn't really keep himself in check until the end of the match. You know, he was blasting the bigger ball, obviously. He had some really good moments this week, beating Pellegrino, beating Michalski in the quarterfinals, and just not giving them too much of a shot. against Tseng. That also how it looked after the opening set, but the Taiwanese was able to like make a lot of balls, some miraculous gets as well, and eventually just make Maestrelli miss. You know, that's kind of it. But it's still a very decent run for him. Of course, his second semifinal of the season after Tenerife recently, where he lost to Gigante in the semifinals. And then Franco Agamenone, another Italian semifinalist. Definitely a welcome change for him, because so far he was 2-7 for the year going into Székesfehérvár. First event on clay, and he gets a big run. He beats Schellbach, Fatic, Kolas and Troguet. Pretty crazy comeback against Zdeněk Kolas, and he just didn't threaten Troguet at all in the semifinal. Of course, Agamenone kind of plays a pretty weird style of tennis right now, where he's net rushing a lot too. He's like serving volleying sometimes, but actually he doesn't even feel that comfortable at the net. You know, it's a little weird, but well, he managed to make it effective. And I think last year we kind of saw what Agamenone is right now. We're like, throughout the year, he's kind of struggling for consistency. But when he finds that one big week where the weapons are firing, he can do the Braunschweig trick from last year, you know. Last year, his win rate was like way sub 50%. But he still had that massive run in Braunschweig where he won the title beating a lot of quality players. So maybe something similar can happen to Agamenone this year. Maybe he's just going to have this one random peak out of nowhere and totally dominate a challenger field. Was not that close here, as he lost to Troguet 2-6-2-6 in the semifinals. And my pick for the title was actually Thiem. Honestly, when I saw later on that he was playing Daniel, I remember waking up that day and thinking, Michalski can actually win this, right? I mean, Michalski right now can actually beat Thiem, I think. But I was just not expecting Domi to be this, I don't even want to say poor, but uninspiring after the extended training block that he had. I think I was just expecting something more, like to see some progress. So far, he hasn't had it, but he still has two more challengers in the next 2 weeks. Then I think he might be playing Estoril or something like that. So, yeah, let's see if this actually wakes him up in any way. But this first performance in Székesfehérvár didn't really suggest that he made much progress during this small off-season that he took. And then we also have the doubles, which were won by, as I mentioned earlier, Tito Androguet, along with Matteo Martino. And the crazy thing about this run, besides them beating some very good pairings, because this was actually a bit of a stacked draw. I mean, Goranson Molchanov, Aribaje Cornea, they also managed to beat Eiseric Pellegrino. So, you know, quite a lot of good names here. And even Kovalik Zelenay in the opening round. All of their matches were deciding set tiebreaks. All of these deciding set tiebreaks were pretty close to it. It was 11-9, 12-10, 10-8, and 10-8. So that was probably the most interesting part of their run, their first event together, and they pick up this title. And then we also have to talk about the Challenger 50 in Hamburg, where there was also like not a shortage of major interesting storylines. And Henry Squire picks up his first ATP Challenger title. And I have to say that, while maybe he was never really a player that we were picking for titles or something like that, like it did feel like Squire is a little too good to not to have a peak run at some point in the future. He actually was playing pretty solid already in the last few weeks. I mean, in Lille he qualifies and then he loses to Benjamin Hassan having match points. In Lugano, he qualifies and then loses to Zizou Berks in the second round. First set was pretty close. But in Hamburg, he literally had like the perfect week. He only got broken once, and that was in the final. He went down 3-4, but from that point onwards, he was like so clean on return, so good behind his serve. The overall level of control over his game, like that's something that Squire doesn't always have. I would say that that's something that Squire, it was kind of new in his game, like how much he was able to control his shots. And I guess this is just a run of, you know, a very aggressive player who has the weaponry, putting it together for a week. And it makes sense for Squire to have a run like this at some point, because I feel like his quality for the past year or so, it's been good enough. It was just all about finding that one big week, I think. And he managed to do it, beating Diaz, Uchiyama, Molaker via retirement, then Blocks, and then Clément, Šídek. So, definitely a bit of a breakout run, and now he might be thinking about reaching Roland Garros qualifying. It's there. Let's see if he can actually take that opportunity or not, but the opportunity is definitely there. Clément Sidek, the finalist, he was coming from the qualies here. He was on that insane run where he won the 15k in Grenoble, then the Glasgow Challenger, then in Pau he makes the semifinals, loses to Reedy. So by the time he made the final here, he was on an insane record of like 19-1 in his last 20 matches. But eventually Henry Squire manages to get the job done against him, even though for like the first 5 games, 7 games maybe even, it looked like Sidek might get another one of these wins where like he's just redirecting very well and making a big ball striker play more than that the guy would be comfortable with. And he had a few wins like this week as well, especially Michael Agvi in the quarterfinals. I think we'll talk on Agvi in a second. But when it comes to Clément Sidek, he managed to beat Aga Bigun, Takahashi, Andreev, Kun, Agvi, Shimizu to get to the final. What a run to end his indoor season. It's going to be very exciting to see how he progresses from here as well. The level indoors is definitely like top 200 at least. And what's funny about Clément Sidek is that he only has one professional match on clay from 2019. So far, he hasn't signed up for any clay challengers. We'll see if he does in the future. I would assume so in like April, May, because he should be building up for a Roland Garros wildcard, right? I mean, I think he should get one for the qualies. Definitely. But for now, he is going to try to extend his indoor season in the 25Ks. And I think that's also a smart call. But at some point, I would like to see him try on clay, even if he's not going to be as effective. I think that's pretty clear. And then Alexander Bloks, the semifinalist, second semifinal of the season. Of course, for Bloks, he's like sort of been driving around challengers only and Australian Open qualies this year. Now he's going to play Miami, by the way. Not too long of a turnaround, but he's gonna play Pedro Martinez. But anyway, he basically is 9-9 for the year, so he hasn't been doing that well. However, two semifinals already, and this is obviously just Bloks picking up experience for the future. Like, it doesn't matter how well he's doing really for the most part in the first few months here, although the indoor season is probably where he's going to be at his strongest. But anyway, he beats Kashnikovsky here, plays an insane match against Bujun Chaoketa from like, what was it, 0-5 down or something like that in the opening set. He was kind of unplayable. He still lost the opener, but he manages to win the next two with just stupidly good shot making. He also beats Alexander Richard in the quarterfinals and then loses to the unplayable Squire this week. Second time this year that he loses to Squire, but I think it's pretty clear that while that first match was a bit of a blown opportunity for Bloks, in the semifinals here he kind of didn't have a shot at Squire. And then you have Yuta Shimizu as well as the semifinalist. He was able to like really just show that this lefty Nishioka-ish game is also capable against players like maybe a different set of opponents than the ones that we were watching him for the most part before then, because of course we know him from runs in like Australia, Asia, Puerto Vallarta as well last year. But now he actually also gets to the semis here. Very good win over Mattia Bellucci in the quarterfinals, by the way, Bellucci being my pick for the title. I was a little disappointed that Mattia lost it. It felt like his shot selection just wasn't on par on the day. However, Shimizu had a very nice run and also could have gotten Clément Sidek in the second set, could have extended it to a decider. Eventually didn't, but otherwise, yeah, he managed to handle these indoor courts in Germany pretty well. And also to talk about Michael Agvi, of course, his challenger debut. I mentioned him quite a lot in the preview. And Agvi had an insane run. I mean, he totally demolishes Philippe Pelivo in the final, in the first qualifying round. The level is insane. The untouchable serve, we've seen that. Absolutely. We've seen that untouchable serve. You know, it was something we were aware of. But the way he was hitting off the ground, like, it just seems like he's really unleashing that athletic potential that it was pretty clear he has. Like, since watching him live in that summer of 2022, I remember it was just so clear that despite being, you know, a big hitter, and like we always kind of tend to drift towards those as players with big potential, but just the dynamic nature of his game and also like how you could see that he might have a lot of athletic ability to grow into. That was definitely one of the most exciting parts about Agvi a few years back. And now he's like kind of crushing his forehand from any spot on the court. The backhand had some really good matches when it was a weapon, and it was also solid. Of course, there are still some things to like fine tune, and I don't think he's going to be like, well, breaking the top 100 this year, for example, or something. But honestly, like if he manages to get to a level where at the end of the season he's, let's say, playing challenger qualifying in the second indoor swing regularly, like that would be amazing. And I think that's actually doable. Let's see how he keeps going, how he's going to also plan his starts, how he's going to play on outdoor hard courts too. But all in all, I mean, some of the level that he showed this week against Marc-Andre Hüsler as well in the second round, clearly the better player there, actually the one who was able to do more damage on serve and off the ground, despite Hüsler being such a big hitter and, you know, such a talented ball striker himself. This was a scary performance. This was a performance that really shows you how much talent he has, and with proper funding, training, which honestly, like right now, he should be, you know, getting some more attention, right, from people, and that should really help him as well to sort of keep this going, keep playing, keep progressing. And he loses to Clément Chidek in the quarterfinals, sure. But other than the fact that he had like some small physical things going forwards into the event, because, well, he's kind of not used to this quality right now. Of course, he's kind of not used to playing at this level yet. The body isn't, at least. So against Chidek, he was definitely made a bit uncomfortable with like how the Frenchman just takes on pace, redirects it, how he makes him just play in a way that the other opponents couldn't. But it was still an incredible run. I was under some pressure here because a few people texted me before this Agvi run, you know, that they still haven't watched him, but that I was hyping him up so much on Twitter that they were like excited to. And I was like, okay, so if he plays Palivo in the first round and he loses like 2-6 to 6, I'm gonna look like an idiot. But that did not happen. I mean, he beat Palivo in like 47 minutes, and all these people were just like, oh my goodness, Michael Agvi is so amazing. And I guess that's kind of the takeaway from this week, even though it ended in the quarterfinals, that the potential that we were, thinking like, whether, okay, are we crazy, or is this actually a guy who has incredible chances going forward? Yeah, actually he has. It's not a joke. It's true. It's there. And the Hamburg run, I think, was a fantastic display of that. So yeah, with that, we also have to talk about the doubles, of course, in Hamburg, indeed, that's the last one. Bellucci and Bertola won it over Drzewiecki, Niklas Salminen. A bit of a missed opportunity, honestly, for Patrick and Karol. I was really thinking they should grab this title, but after all, Bellucci is such a good doubles player too, with just the wide array of skills that he has. And Bertola, I honestly didn't think of him much when it comes to doubles ever, but they managed to get it done, only playing one tiebreak. And that's actually a very strong run for them, I would say, because the quarterfinals, they beat that Schneider-Wallner college duo, which I've been mentioning quite a lot, especially with Wallner's serve being so dangerous. And then, yeah, Drzewiecki, Niklas Salminen, that's an awesome win at this level too, I think, for the kind of impromptu Italian-Swiss pairing, but they've actually played before in the past a few tournaments. And when it comes to the match and upset of the week section, I have to see how my poll is doing on Twitter. I'm recording this on Monday morning, so it's been a while since I posted it. I posted it when the last challenger final for the day was done. So that was after Nuno Borges closed out Matteo Berrettini. Phoenix was the last challenger final yesterday. And I think that in the poll, it's dominated by Berrettini at Mane. I also put Blocks against Buder as my Hamburg pick. There was a lot of problems with like picking something from Santiago because I wasn't sure which Varias match to go for, whether against Jab or Passaro. And I eventually just ended up going for Drax Ugo Carabelli for the poll. This is the match that is currently second place, and also Tseng Martino from Sekes Fehervar. I think I'm going to have to go Berrettini at Mane too. I am tempted to go for something from Santiago, but just the comeback from Matteo, the fighting spirit that he showed throughout the week, I kind of want to reward that. And when it comes to upset of the week, as usual, I'm kind of just glancing through the draws and thinking what could be a pick here. Kudla over Safiurin in Phoenix, that kind of surprised me, not gonna lie. Drax over Ugo Carabelli, maybe not as much because Camilo was already on fumes after the previous week, so, you know, it was kind of okay. Federico Agustin Gomez over Fonseca, not really, because, yeah, Fonseca is a favorite right now. I just don't really buy into it because, of course, he's not going to deliver the same performance every time. Valerio Aboyan over Puccinelli de Almeida, I think that's also an overrated one by the bookies. Well, maybe just Michalski over team then, right? I mean, you can't really go wrong with that one, I think. Even though, yeah, I had this feeling when I woke up that, okay, so maybe he might actually do it. But yeah, I think Michalski over team still has to be it. That was actually Daniel's first top 100 win. Definitely when the qualifiers were like spread out into the draw, you kind of could feel that, well, team got the easiest possible options in the first two rounds, I would say. It was Michalski, then Kretu against Martin Tifon. Maybe it would have been better for him to play Kretu right away, but, you know, as a whole, his section wasn't that tough after it was filled with the qualifiers. So I think that's a solid option. I see the bookies also rated Topo over Edmund pretty highly. That's stupid. I mean, Marco Topo is like so underrated consistently, but you know, it's also because he doesn't get the results. So I understand why that is the case. However, in an individual match, I think he can always produce. And that was also his first match of the season. I didn't even realize. So maybe that's why the odds were that high. But now I'm going to go with Daniel Michalski over Dominic Thiem as my upset of the week pick. So yeah, with that, we can go to the challengers that will be taking place. And we have, because it's the first round of Miami, of course, there are not many top 100 players. In fact, just one involved. The first round, the first week of Miami, just one involved on the Challenger Tour this week. That doesn't mean that there won't be a lot of things to look at. We've got Asuncion, a Challenger 75. We've got Murcia and Zadar in Europe, also 75s. And also we have a Merida Challenger at the Yucatan Open in Mexico, a Challenger 50. And by the way, guys, we are fully into the clay season now. All four events are on red clay. So basically that was it for the indoor swing, at least for its first part. It's going to come back at the end of the year, obviously. But for now, we are fully into the clay season on the Challenger Tour. And let's just start with Asuncion, because that's what I have here. Of course, we're going to talk about the 75s next and then finish it off with Merida, which has some wild things in the draw, but we're going to talk about it later. So for Asuncion, this is the first edition of this event. Asuncion is, by the way, in Paraguay, obviously. This is the capital of the country. And worth mentioning that it is not on altitude. So it is not a city where we will be looking at, you know, potentially being some big advantage for the surface and big hitters. This is not on altitude. This is not at altitude. So Juan Pablo Varillas is the top seed. He plays Juan Carlos Prado Angelo, the Bolivian wildcard in the opening round. Prado Angelo, of course, the Roland Garros finalist from last year in the juniors, losing to Prismic. One of them will face a qualifier. We've got Bueno playing a qualifier and Goncalo Oliveira playing Federico Agustin Gomez. Hugo Delian against João Lucas Reis da Silva. Usually I would say upset alert, but, you know, since it's not altitude, probably no. Alexander Weiss plays a qualifier. We've got Pedro Sakamoto against Carlos Sanchez Hover. Gustavo Haide is the 8th seed playing a qualifier. And then in the bottom half, we've got Blanca Noa against Puccinelli de Almeida. Luz against Drax, the semifinalist from last week. Fonseca is also here and, well, kind of has a nice draw. I mean, there's no guarantees right now with Fonseca, you know. The last week, I think, kind of showed us that. But he's playing Guillen Meza in the opening round, and that will be quite exciting, I think. Then he has Olivieri or the Paraguayan wildcard Hernando José Escura Isnardi. And then in the bottom half, there's another Paraguayan wildcard in Adolfo Daniel Vallejo, of course, the way more famous player, the great junior as well. He plays Renzo Olivo and then Colarini or Buruchaga. Buruchaga is the second seed here, which kind of tells you that this draw is, well, I would say there's Varillas and then there's a pretty big gap between the next players. And also there we have Mager against Sekulic and Quaco playing a qualifier as the seventh seed. So if there's anything in the qualifying, let me look at that. Juan Bautista Torres, he plays Rubin Stadium today. Let's see, maybe if he qualifies, he can be a threat. Valerio Aboyan, a great couple of weeks. If he beats Uchida, I think he's going to be a threat. Kestelboim, of course, recently on a bit of a run. Perhaps at the challenger level, he's usually stopped by someone. But still, he might be a threat to go pretty deep in the draw if he lands in a nice spot. Valerio Aboyan, yeah, in Punta del Este, and no, not Punta del Este, in Santa Cruz and Santiago, he was definitely quite dangerous. He didn't beat Monteiro or Mager, but on the way to these matches, he performed extremely well. But yeah, all in all, probably not going to be looking at these guys. And this is basically a question for me, whether I want to pick Varias for back-to-back titles. And looking at the quality of the draw, I kind of want to. Of course, this can backfire. Maybe he just withdraws from the event as well. I mean, who knows? For now, I don't think he's done that. He can also, just straight up get tired at some point this week. But yeah, I think I still want to try that, just because this draw, as I said, is pretty lopsided between him and all the other guys. So, who else could I really be picking here? I could try just Fonseca. It would be amazing if Joao wins the title, but I just don't know if after his recent performances I buy into him winning 5 matches in a row. I probably don't, honestly. Then you also have Buruchaga. Is Buruchaga actually a reliable pick? I mean, maybe in Paraguay, Vallejo can beat him in the second round. That's possible, right? Otherwise, it just feels like a bit of a mess. Hugo Delian, of course, is also a sensible selection, always, basically, in any clay South American event. But no, I'm going to try Varias again. I think simply the quality gap between him and the rest of the field, especially sort of now that he's found some form, found some better rhythm in Santiago, is big enough for me to still consider Juan Pablo Varias as the favorite for the title, despite the fact that he will be playing for the second week in a row. And with that, we can move to the 75s in Europe. We've got Murcia, where Matteo Arnaldi won the title last year. That was still when he was outside the top 100, but of course this time he is basically so high up that he's not going to be playing this event anymore. Albert Ramos Vinolas is the first seed, playing a qualifier, then Calvin Emery or a qualifier. We've got another qualifier playing Boo, and also qualifier playing Napolitano. So basically we have a section with 4 players and 4 qualifiers, and there's no qualifier-qualifier matchups, so it's pretty funny to look at. We've got Jesper de Jong also playing a qualifier. Jesper, of course, recently injured in Tenerife, so it's nice to see him back. Then we have Hugo Blanchet against Alejandro Moro Cañas. Branko Cosano faces Trungheliti. And I'm excited for this one. Daniel Merida Aguilar against Andrea Pellegrino. Radu Albot against Marco Cecchinato. Kind of a decent opportunity for Cecchinato to get some form going. He's already beaten Albot this year, but yeah, the last few matches were rough. Matias Borg against Sanchez Izquierdo, Enrique Rocha plays Roca Bataya, and Gregoire Barrère is also here as the third seed. Of course, the shorter indoor season for someone like Barrère, that's not great. And let's see how he performs here. I mean, he's playing a qualifier in the opening round, but all in all, probably not a threat for most clay titles, even though he's had some runs before. I think he made Bordeaux final a couple of years back. Also, Pablo Yamas Ruiz takes on Jan Choiński. Chunsin Tseng, the winner from Sekesh Fehervar, is there with a special exempt, playing Gakov. And this bottom half, sort of bottom part of the draw, is also quite interesting, with Richard Gasquet as the second seed, Santiago Rodriguez Taverna being his rival, and then Lloyd Harris on clay can also be their opponent or a qualifier. Yeah, so this is pretty tough again, because the top seeds that we have, Ramos Vinolas, Gasquet, these are veterans, but they are veterans who have not been doing too well, and I'm just not sure if they can win 5 matches in a row right now again. Then again, their draws maybe suggest that they could. Anyway, in the qualifying first, Elias against De Bru, that's a pretty interesting one. We've got Gaubas against Vincent Ruggeri as well. A lot of very good matches in the final qualies round. Nicolas Kuhn, maybe he can push through. Even if in Hamburg, it was a bit of a reality check, I think, when he played Shidek. There's also Brancaccio against Alvarez Varona. Alvarez Varona, always one of my sort of favorite forgotten prospects, because of injuries, alongside Jimeno Valero, if we're talking about Spaniards. I think these two guys definitely had proper prospects in the sport. And it seems that injuries have kind of stopped them in their tracks. Let's see if they recover. Jimeno Valero not in this draw, but Alvarez Varona is. I just, you know, anytime I can mention Carlos Jimeno Valero, I do it. Anyway, Petros Tsitsipas also had a wild card, but he only won 4 games against David Horta Sanchez. How is Petros still getting singles wild cards at this stage? I don't really know, but well, anyway. So yeah, who are we picking here? I don't think Barrera is really an option. I think someone like Yamas Ruiz would, in better form, be really justified here. You've got De Jong, but I don't know how strong he's going to be because, yeah, he was out for a moment. Ramos Viñolas, I know I've been saying that, like, he doesn't have a top 100 game anymore, maybe, or, like, that he's going to struggle to get back to the main tour and, like, win matches there. I still think that. However, when I see a draw like this, I kind of like his chances, you know. Calvin Emery in the second round, yeah, that could be tough potentially. There's a fair few dangerous qualifiers too. But yeah, I mean, just looking at his quarter, I kind of have to go with the top seed again, you know. I will go with Albert Ramos Viñolas, yeah. Gasquet makes me less confident after last week, whereas Ramos Viñolas, I think, had some okay moments in the Golden Swing. Like, he definitely had some matches where he was just outplayed, like against Franz Cerundolo, for example, right? He had zero chance to win there. But he's not... I think if he gets a draw like this, he probably can still capitalize on that. That's all I'm gonna say. Like, I think he still maintains a pretty decent level. We'll see about that, I suppose. We'll find out a lot about Ramos Viñolas and where he is right now, even also with his motivation in Murcia this week. But yeah, that's basically what I'm going to try here. I'm going to attempt to land Albert Ramos Viñolas. Sorry for picking 2 top seeds already, but, you know, it is what it is. I'll see if I can come up with something weirder in Zadar or Merida. And speaking of Zadar, let's get there. Always the Croatian clay court event, sort of in the same slot for the past few years. Very windy usually. Let's see how it looks this time. So we've got Alessandro Giannesi as the defending champion, and it's actually a very important event for him. He's been struggling to win matches recently, only got his first win of the season last week in Székesfehérvár Hervar. So this is kind of crucial for him, and it might maybe even end his career if he loses round one here. And he has a very tough draw, let me tell you. We're going to get there in a second. Dominic Thiem plays Filip Krajinovic in the opening round. Can you imagine that? Thiem Krajinovic, and I think it's actually today, so by the time you're listening to this show, it's probably going to be long gone. But yeah, Thiem Krajinovic in Zadar in the opening round. That is pretty crazy that they managed to land each other, and I have no clue actually what's going to happen there, because yeah, Thiem did not look too impressive in Székesfehérvár Hervar, obviously. Filip Krajinovic since Koblenz, where I watched him live, and he was like so much cleaner than the other players, you know, you could see the difference in quality. Suddenly he's not really putting in the results. Suddenly he's not qualifying for challengers anymore. So yeah, I really have no clue what will happen here. Lukas Neumeier is there, plays a qualifier, so it could be an Austrian round 2 if we get Thiem Neumeier. And also Dino Prismic here against Michal Vrbenski. So like, if Prismic and Thiem make the quarters, that would be massive. Prismic or Vrbenski can play a qualifier in the second round, basically. Zsombor Piros takes on Daniel Michalski. Jozef Kovalik plays a qualifier. By the way, if you're interested in sort of the top 100 debut update for Zsombor, it's, again, like, it's not going to be easy. In Zadar, he probably needs to win the title or make the final. Would the final even be enough? I don't think so, but it could be enough with, like, another big result in the near future. But yeah, basically for Piros, I actually think at this stage, it's kind of more likely than not that he doesn't get it done, because yeah, he's just defending points every week from now on, and especially middle of April, he's going to drop 2 challenger titles. So it's actually more likely than not that he's not going to get there to me. But, you know, still, the chance is there. Like, he wins the title, he gets it. So it's not like it's impossible for him, right? He gets a title, and it is possible. So we will see how that goes. Anyway, Zdenek Kolasz also plays Ricardo Bonadio, and then Nino Serdarusic or Matteo Martino. We've got Stefano Travaglia as the sixth seed playing Clément Tabur, then qualifier or Dalavaje. Matej Dodik, very interesting Croatian talent. He plays Filip Misolic in the opening round, and I will be very excited to watch this match because Matej Dodik recently has been destroying the ITF circuit. He is 17-2 for the year, with the only losses coming to Kravchenko and also to Ulises Blanch. Recently, he's won two ITF titles. Were they strong? Quite a lot of youngsters in one of them, Cina, Brunold, Schwarzler, whereas in the most recent one, which was actually last week on clay already, he beat Jay Clark, he beat Jacopo Berrettini, Kauko Valta, Federico Arnaboldi. You know, not the strongest run. However, yeah, 17-2, the 19-year-old from Croatia is doing damage. I actually don't know if he's already 19 or if he's still 18. Let me maybe check that. But he's still 18. He's going to be 19 in July. But yeah, definitely one to check out if you have the chance this week against Filip Misolic. Their odds, by the way, very, very close. So that kind of already tells you how respected Dodik is at the moment. Misolic, obviously, also in a slump. So that contributes to it. And one of them will face Ginard or Andreev. And also we've got Corentin Moutet, the second seed, playing Giannessi. So this is what I meant with Giannessi having a very tough opening round. Well, let's say that. The motivation should be at its highest this week for Giannessi. Let's see if that actually changes anything. Then we also have one of them playing Novak or Skatov, and the last players in the draw are Fatic, Kuzmanov, and Maestrelli faces a qualifier. So yeah, when it comes to the qualifying, there are a few interesting storylines. As I'm talking, the final round matches will actually be starting, or at least some of them. And I want to see how good Wallner is against Foraitek, because I actually have never seen Wallner play singles. I've seen him play like 15 doubles matches by now. I haven't seen him play singles, which is a bit wild. But when it comes to the other players in the qualifying, we've got Mathis Erhardt. Even Furness faces Van Schelbohm in a pretty interesting final round. Krutek, if he qualifies, maybe he can get some form going. Artur Gea as well. Yeah, if he qualifies over Nicklas, that would be a potential run for sure as well. But all in all, let's look at the Zadar draw. So I don't want to pick team, not only because he's the top seed and I don't want to go for all top seeds and stuff, but he plays Filip Krajinovic, and I really have no clue what to think about that match. Like, Filip should have a decent chance to win, but I was just pretty disappointed with the last few weeks from him. So yeah, I have no idea how to sort of rate these two players at the moment. I might just go Dino Prismic. I know I've said I have my issues with, like, Dino potentially not being like Menchik, where Menchik just sort of straight up instantly grabs enough runs in order to get to the top 100. I think for Prismic it's not as easy because of his playstyle and his quality for now being just, you know, lower than Menchik's, which is no shame, obviously. But yeah, to me, I mean, for because of his playstyle, it's also not going to be as easy to separate himself. However, I like this draw for him quite a lot. You know, Vbenski opening round, then a qualifier. Then he plays Team or Krajinovic, let's say, in the quarters. Like, that's very doable for him. Pirosh, I don't really feel comfortable picking him to get that top 100 debut. He's kind of disappointed a few times already. Misolic, not really an option right now, especially not facing Matej Dodik. Corentin Moutet is always a thing, but, like, do I trust Moutet to win 5 matches again? Maybe I should. I don't know. I mean, Moutet definitely could win this title. It's not impossible at all. But I am going to go with Dino Prismic. I think that's a pretty sensible call here. And that's my winner pick for Zadar. And the last event that we have is the Challenger 50 in Merida. This event is kind of funny. Like, the alternate lists for the main draw and for the qualifying, they got almost fully maxed out, or actually in the case of the qualifying, fully maxed out. So some players that we usually don't see made the main draw, and also some, basically there were a lot of buys in the qualifying because not enough people showed up, you know. Even the 8th seed had a buy, let me remember. Yeah, I think eight buys in the qualifying. So there were actually only a few first round qualifying matches. four of them. Anyway, let's start from the main draw. This is the first edition of the event. It's a Challenger 50. So Mérida actually isn't at altitude. When you type in Mérida into Google, Mérida altitude, it shows you 1,600 meters. However, that shows you the Venezuela Mérida. The one in Mexico, the one in Yucatan, is pretty close to the sea, and it's not at altitude. If you check Mérida, Mexico altitude, it's going to show you that, and also, you know, where it is on the map kind of tells you that already. So this isn't one of these crazy 2,500-meter events. And, it's a Challenger 50, so the field isn't that amazing in the first place. But yeah, Oliver Crawford is the top seed. He plays a qualifier, and then Nick Hart or a qualifier. We've got Facundo Mena playing Antoine Bellier. Bellier, of course, hoping to play the altitude swing later on, but, like, is he going to be dangerous here? We'll see. Mena, I guess, hoping to play the altitude swing as well. They're both really good there. And then one of them will face Gabi Adrian Boitan or a qualifier. Then Tristan Boyer against Alafia Ayeni. I would say very interesting at altitude, at sea level. I don't know if Ayeni can threaten. Then you also have Rodrigo Pacheco Mendes playing James Kent Trotter. Alex Rybakov plays Luis Vessels. And then Thomas Funcutt plays Dimitri Popko. And Popko is a big storyline. Why is Popko a big storyline? So Popko, since losing to Baez in that very tight match in Davis Cup qualifying, he has been on a tear. Davis Cup qualifying. I mean, yeah, sort of. Davis Cup playoffs for the World Group. But anyway, yeah, in Davis Cup, he has been on an absolute tear. And I don't know how much he's going to have left. But over the last 6 weeks, he's played 29 matches and lost one of them. He won four titles along the way. He lost in the final to Juan Pablo Fikovic at one of the indoor clay events. And also, he also had this one final that wasn't even completed because the rain was, too heavy for 2 days in Tucumán, and they had to skip the final. So that's why, you know, he only has four titles despite losing just once. And that's consecutive weeks. This is all consecutive weeks. So he's played 29 matches in the past 6 weeks. I have no idea. Like, when it comes to sheer quality, I think he is probably the best player in the draw right now. But is he going to have enough left? I have no clue. Then we have Aidan Mayo in the bottom half playing Roberto Cid Zubervi. Cid Zubervi must be coming back. Well, actually, he played one Challenger match earlier this year, but he is coming back still, like, to the Challenger level, to the Tour after a while. Then we have David Pichler against the qualifier. There's a battle between Mexican wildcards. So either Rubio Fierros or Hernandez will get Hernandez Serrano will get a main draw win here. And then we also have Baris against Murkel Delien. Fikovic is the fifth seed, playing Emiliano Aguilera, another Mexican wildcard. And we also have Gerard Campagna-Lee against the qualifier. Elmar Ejupovic plays a qualifier. And then at the very bottom, there's a very interesting match between Stefan Kozlov, the recent Kigali semi-finalist and quarter-finalist, right? Who plays Federico Gallo, the second seed. Gallo really looking for some form, and getting Kozlov right away when you're lacking rhythm, that's not ideal. So when it comes to that qualifying draw that I mentioned, we've got Langmo, we've got Paz, but as I said, yeah, a lot of buys. Preston Brown, I guess, already has made it through. Yeah, I think that's how they went about it. So, like, the final rounds that they had already, they played on Sunday. So I guess it makes sense. Boris Kozlov, also worth mentioning. Boris Kozlov is the brother of Stefan Kozlov. So a college player as well, and he managed to even snatch a seeding here, which is very rare. But again, this draw was not even full. So he managed to snatch a seeding not even based on his singles ranking. There were only 9 singles ranked players in this qualifying draw. And Boris Kozlov beat Nicolas Stedden from Mexico, a wildcard, and he's going to play Juan Pablo Paz. I have never seen Boris Kozlov play. Sort of just, you know, based on, let's say, common wisdom, we would probably expect Paz to win. But again, I've never seen him play. Who the hell knows? When it comes to the Kozlov family, there might be some funky play style involved, right, in the Boris Kozlov game. It's very likely. But anyway, who am I picking here? And no, this time I'm not tempted by the top seed, Oliver Crawford. Although he's been winning like 25Ks on clay sometimes. It's not impossible for him to win this for sure. I just kind of want to go for someone maybe with a higher peak, higher ceiling. And for me, yeah, again, the main question is whether I want to pick Dmitry Popko after that winning run. And, you know, just for the fun of it, I'm going to. And I'm going to because I strongly believe that he's the best player in the draw. I don't know if he's not going to, I don't know if he's going to have enough left in the tank. He's definitely had some tough matches over that long ITF streak. I haven't watched a lot of it. I mean, some of that was obviously non-streamed like usual on the ITF circuit. I watched quite a lot of that indoor clay event where he lost to Fikovic. Was it Recife? It was definitely one of the Brazilian 25Ks. I think it was Recife. So all in all, like, I haven't seen that much of that run. But Popko, yeah, I mean, this year he's really having a proper resurgence. And if he only has enough left in the tank, I think he could really separate himself here. But again, it's going to be a question of physicality for me first and foremost. And then after that, you know, Tristan Boyer in the quarters, for example, like, you know, things are not going to be easy for him. Definitely it would be still a step forward for him to win an event like this, also points wise, because obviously it would be just like picking up 225Ks. But yeah, I just want to try Popko because I think he's much stronger than most of the draw is. So perhaps he's somehow going to make it through. And if he does, really, I mean, I kind of don't understand his conditioning, you know, because most players are not going to be able to pull off runs like this. But so far he's been able to. And let's see if he can also take it to the challenger level. And with that, we can end the episode. Thank you guys for being with me here for the last 65-ish minutes. We've covered it all. We're going to be back next week to discuss Asuncion, Zadar, Murcia, and Merida. Perhaps a bit of a slower week on the Challenger circuit with the Miami round one, but still a lot of excitement going on for us, especially the team Krajinovic opening round in Zadar. That is going to be quite insane. I am so excited to watch it today. And yeah, with that, I think I'm going to go and see Foreitek Wallner in Zadar and check out if the big serving German also has a singles game, or is it going to be just doubles for him going forwards, just like they've kind of been playing already this year, Schneider and Wallner. You know, they haven't been trying singles too much, instead focusing on their doubles achievements, which they clearly have a lot of potential at. Anyway, once again, Asuncion, Murcia, Zadar, Merida, that's the plan for next week. For now, thank you for your attention, and I'll see you guys next time. Bye.